Hey guys, welcome back to the Law of Attraction Secrets podcast. I'm your host, Natasha Graziano. Today we're on the road. We are in San Diego and we're with an amazing guest, somebody who I'm sure you know from the AI space. He is revolutionizing the AI space. He's been in this industry for 30 years. Yes, that's before most of us even knew what AI was. Probably through before some people knew what the word AI meant. This guy is at the forefront of it. He is not only a billionaire, he is somebody who is revolutionizing the real estate and mortgage space. In fact, people are scared. This is such a wonderful moment where we get to talk all about these topics, AI, the future of AI, where we're headed, all your questions and things you want to know about real estate and mortgages and AI. Welcome to the show, Pavan Agarwal.
Thanks for having me. And AI means always incredible like you.
I like that version of AI a bit better than the other one. That definitely works. You're such an inspiration. I mean, we're at this event right now. You're about to go on stage. I'm about to go on. This is so exciting. You speak. We were at another event together. I'm doing my twin with one of your companies, which is my twin AI. So I'm getting my own version of me made. I want to start with AI because always amazing. And you know, what did you call it? Always AI, the definition?
Always incredible.
Always incredible. Yes. How did you know that this was the future of the world 30 years ago?
I didn't know. Right. But I just knew I'm a geek, so I just thought it was going to be cool.
We love geeks.
Total geek.
Love geeks. Yeah. So good. But what?
Well, where were you when I was in high school then?
Right. I know. Literally. Oh my God, I would have loved you. I would have been like, that's my man right there. Oh my God. Okay. So tell me a little bit about what you were kind of thinking and where you thought it would go.
Well, I wasn't thinking like where it would be today.
Right.
I mean, you know, kind of where it is today is when I started working on this in the 80s, it was like what is today is like science fiction back then.
Right.
Right. Where the AI is actually kind of like almost a person and
right.
has personality. So when I started to solve just a simple problem, which is how do we help people who get denied, who get rejected by banks, who get discriminated against? How do we help them? Right. And my family owns a national finance company. That's I was working inside that, just solving little problems, right? Little stuff,
wow.
right? Like, you know, and I'm kind of meaning it in a joke. A little problem, like getting people into homes. That's not a little problem.
Right.
it's a big problem, yeah. but it's a lot of families who get left out,
right.
and it turns into a big national problem.
Right.
And so my dad kept saying, he kept telling me, hey, kid, just figure it out, you
right,
know,
right,
automate
right,
it, make
right,
it.
Right.
It's such a simple business. It's just paperwork, automate it, right? And so that's when I started the journey. I said, well, if I'm going to automate it, the machine's got to make decisions. It's got to figure out
right,
stuff on its
behalf.
Own, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a form of, that is artificial intelligence, with it, looking at the data, looking at the documents and saying, let's do this next to it.
Right.
right. And then let's do this next to it.
Right.
So if you make a lot of small automated decisions
mm-hmm.
Through a series of computer programs, mm-hmm. neural nets, whatever you want to call it, right, through a combination of stuff, you're now starting to have a computerized intelligence that's mimicking
mm-hmm.
what a human being would do.
Wow.
And so that's how it built step by step. And now to a point where it doesn't just mimic what a human being does. It actually, in many ways, does it faster and therefore better and more accurately, right? It doesn't make mistakes. It's like any machine, right? You could be working in a assembly line and for Ford and pressing the drill and drilling holes into the plate, right? Or you could have a robot doing it, which is going to do it faster and more accurately and consistently.
Right.
Right. It doesn't make the machine better than the human.
No.
Just that's what machines are good at, is doing redundant things over and over again. And most service industry is a lot of redundant work.
And why not have AI step in and do the jobs we don't want to do?
Exactly.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So what was your first AI company that you then went in to start?
Well, this is, you know, Angel AI is my first AI company.
And it's 30 years old.
Well, it's technically 15-ish years
mm-hmm.
old, or 12 years old. But the work leading up to it has been going on since the 90s.
Tell us about Angel AI.
Okay. Okay. So Angel AI, just go to askangel.ai and she's your financial best friend.
So it's like ChatGPT, but with financials?
We call it AI you can bank on.
Wow.
So it's banking without the bank. So think about it. So that means you don't have to deal with talking to a bank officer who you don't know and sharing all your personal information to, who might judge you, who might just snicker if you have a late or something. Many of us have had that experience. Right? It's embarrassing talking about your financial situation. Why do you want to talk to a banker about that? Talk to an AI about it.
Yeah.
AI doesn't care. And it's all private. It's all kept securely and privately for you. And then she's the Angel AI. She will tell you what your options are, give you qualifications. She can even fix your credit.
You were telling me this the other day. You were like, it can fix your credit. Well, anybody who needs to fix their credit, I know there's a lot of people out there, because whenever I ask an audience who needs to fix their credit, half the audience raise their hand, and we do it with their eyes closed, and they're like, me.
Yeah.
So how does somebody go about it? What does your AI do? Obviously, it's a super high profile software, but it does something that fixes it?
Yes, and here's the thing. Fixing your credit is a very burdensome process, right? It's very kind of a lot of details, and you have to be consistently following up with your merchant. Like if say you bought some furniture on layaway and they reported you late when it wasn't.
Right.
Right. And now if you want to fight with them about that, first of all, if you're Hispanic and you're struggling with English, right, English is not your first language, I mean, they're not going to help you. They're not gonna, even if they have people who could speak Spanish, and they're not going to speak Spanish to you,
because
they're going to take advantage of that, right? So we see Hispanics often get left out because of the language barrier, right? So instead of you going through and knowing all the credit repair rules, it was called a FCRA, Fair Credit Reporting Act. Mm-hmm. Most people, it's just complicated. Most people don't know that, but the AI knows it. So you just tell the AI, hey, I had a problem with this furniture company, blah, blah, blah. This is what really happened. And now the AI will just nonstop keep harassing that company. It will send them letters, emails, whatever needs to be done. On your behalf.
And do you have to like give it an email login?
Well, you have to create an account.
Oh, got it, right? Got it.
Create your account on the AI.
This is so awesome. Yeah. I'm going to add a link to this below. I know somebody out there is going to want to have their credit fixed. This is phenomenal. Yeah. Thank you for sharing it. Okay, so question. What inspired you to merge technology like AI and blockchain with the mortgage industry? And what was the moment that you knew it would change everything?
Well, you know, I live in Dorado, Puerto Rico. It wasn't like this when I moved there in 2012, 2013, and it wasn't like this. But sometimes, like around 2017, like the entire crypto community moved there, you know?
Really?
Like all the big names of the original founders of Ethereum, the big Bitcoin guys, Brock Pierce and all these guys just moved all at once. They discovered Puerto Rico and all moved out at once. And that's when, frankly, that was my first introduction to crypto.
Wow.
And I knew of it, but I didn't really like get into it. But when you end up becoming, it's all about the company you keep, right?
Right.
Who you're around, you get new ideas, inspiration. That's why we do events like this, is want to mix up different people, different backgrounds. And that's how you get new ideas. And that's why you're watching this podcast, because you're so good at bringing on so many powerful hosts and powerful guests
who everybody wants to learn from. Like, who wouldn't want to learn from you? And on that note, if so far you are enjoying this and you want to share a clip with the audience, just grab it off YouTube. You can go on YouTube and just grab it and put it up on your social media. Tag myself and Pavan, and I will for sure be reposting my favorite clips from you guys, so you can get involved and be a part of our show. Okay, my next question. You steered Sum West through the 2008 crash.
Yes.
What lessons from that time do you still carry into your decision-making today? And for anyone that doesn't know, what is the Sum West crash?
Well, I wouldn't call it Sum West crash. It was the big economic crash that happened in We didn't cause that crash, so.
No, you didn't. You didn't cause the crash, but you helped everyone out of it.
Right. Well, yes. So, yeah, as we remember in 2007, 2008, Bear Stearns went under, then the Lehman Brothers went under, and America and the Western civilization was on the verge of bankruptcy. And Congress stayed up all night, and then they passed what's called TARP. Troubled Asset Repurchase Program, and that saved the world, because if they hadn't done it on Sunday night, Monday morning your credit cards wouldn't swipe through.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah, could you imagine? But most people don't understand how bad it was.
No, we would have gone into poverty if people couldn't use their credit cards.
Yeah, your credit cards wouldn't work, your bank ATM won't dispense cash. We were literally at that point where Monday morning, everything was going to stop.
And you were able to help save this?
No.
You're like Superman. Do you take off your shirt and have Superman underneath?
I barely saved myself. So that was, you know, most mortgage companies and finance operations, you know, banks, so many banks failed at that time. Most finance companies failed at that time. And it was a really hard time to get through. And we actually got down to our last $50,000 of cash.
My gosh.
Got down to that kind of bare, but we scraped through. But the main lesson, the reason we were able to save the company, save the firm, and didn't end up in the dustbin, there was something back then called implodometer, where all these companies that were imploding because of the crisis were being listed. There's like hundreds of companies that were imploded, big, huge companies, big mega companies. But anyways, So the way we got through it is because my father never broke a trade, right?
Wow.
He had this long 30 plus year reputation of always coming through on his word. So we were caught in a really bad spot with a massive amount of loans, and didn't have the liquidity. And one of our trading partners, because of that reputation, right? In the middle, imagine the whole world is on fire. The whole financial world is on fire. Everyone, you don't know who's going to collapse next. But because we gave our word, he took the trade and helped us clear out our position.
My gosh.
Right? And without a contract or anything, there was no time for contracts.
No.
It was just all on the word, all on our word. Right? So trust and honor is the most important thing. If you take anything away from this interview today, right? Don't always be ready to leave a dollar on the table. Don't squeeze your trading partner for every little penny. Number one, right? Because it's a partnership. It's long term.
Right.
That's number one. Always, always, always keep. Don't just try to take everything for yourself. Number two, never even tell the smallest lie. Not even. It's no such thing as a white lie or just trying to color something differently with people that you trade with and that you exchange money and goods with, right? Just plain, simple facts. This is what it is. This is the situation. This is how, you know, what I can do, what I can't do. And if you say you're going to do something, just do it.
Very good.
Right? And because that, you know, kind of goodwill and trust and reputation, it doesn't show up on your balance sheet. It doesn't show up in your bank account, right? And sometimes you wonder, well, what am I doing all this for? Why am I always the good guy? Okay, but it's in moments like that you cash that check.
My gosh. Wow. That's such amazing advice. People are really fearful of AI taking their jobs. Like, it's a big phenomenon. How do you ensure and help people to feel better about that, and that it's not replacing them, it is just empowering them?
Yes. I would say what they should be afraid of is not AI taking your job, is big tech taking your data. Because what people don't understand is data is the new gold. What does that mean? I mean, you may have heard that expression, may not have heard that expression, but everything that makes you special, right? Everything that makes your brand, that's your business, that who you are, whether you're Natasha, super celebrity, or whether you own a local pizza shop, right? You have a special, you're making pizzas, you have a special ingredient for pizza. There's a special way you treat your customers. Mm-hmm. There's a special way you handle everything,
right?
That's data, right? People don't stop and write down the ingredients.
Right.
They don't write down the recipes. They don't write down how they greet customers, okay? But guess what? When you're using AI, and you're taking video of customers coming in and out, and then you're posting that on Facebook, right? Well, Facebook is learning that. Meta is learning all of the, so if you're on a pizza shop and everything you do in that pizza shop, and you're creating content and you're posting, and you got to create content because you got to get,
right?
You got to get your word out. But all that content you create, guess what? Guess who's learning? Is those companies are learning it, and is going into their AI.
Right.
And now their AI can replicate your pizza shop.
Oh.
Right? They can replicate the same, the customer can have now the same feeling and experience, but now their AI could do the whole thing and without you. So that is the really, the, so it's if you protect your data, protect your essence of who you are and keep that safe, right? Then AI is instead of Meta replacing you with an AI, right? You put an AI to work for you and now you do more business and make more money. You're making the money, not, and I'm not singling out Meta, Mark, if you're listening. I'm not picking on you, but the point is, you don't want the companies that own AI to learn everything about your business and then.
Well, you get choices with Facebook. It says, "Do you want to?" It gives you options if you want to. So that's good.
Right.
But there are options on a lot of these sites, like cookies. Nobody knows what the fuck a cookie is. Yeah. Like, do you accept all cookies? Yeah, I want to eat cookies. Like, I don't even know what that meant when I first started clicking. What are cookies on the site?
Right. So with Angel AI, what we saw, we solved the problem is the data. We tell you to take your data. And first of all, first thing you need is a blockchain wallet. And so Angel AI provides you a wallet, right? So now when it's on chain, it's secure and it's a public record that this is your data, okay? And then second, we say, okay, put your data in your wallet and let that data in your wallet drive your AI, your personal AI. Mm-hmm. And so people think that your personal AI means that, well, I can't possibly have my own AI because I need all these big servers and I gotta be like Microsoft and have all of this, you know, billions of dollars in it. But they don't realize that that's not your AI. Your personal AI is your data set. Right. And which is you're generating, I think, something like, you know, 10 gigabytes a minute of data every human being generates. Right. It just goes out and disappears into the ethos. Right. So instead, we're coming up with creative ways that as you work and function and do things, that data is collected, captured into your wallet. I don't get a copy. Bill Gates doesn't get a copy. Mark Zuckerberg, no one else gets a copy of that but you.
And so you just have to have it on your laptop, have your wallet, and it will collect.
Right, right. And so we're collecting right now for people, for anyone who creates an Angel wallet, and starts collecting. Right? And what part of our mission is to expand the scope and how it collects. Broader and broader, so that it and again, we're collecting it for you, and only you have a copy. Nobody else. We don't have a copy. It's you. It goes in your wallet.
That's beautiful.
Right.
Well, I think everyone needs an AI wallet. Ultimately, yeah.
Yes.
Everybody needs to have a place because this is the way the future is going. I mean, holy shit! I just saw a robot in China. Is it where there? It's gonna carry a child. Did you see that? Is that real?
I don't know if it's real, but I saw the news.
Are we going that way though? Are robots going to be carrying our babies?
I hope not.
I saw it and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is like where we're going. But how are they going to replicate the feeling of love going through the womb when you sing to your baby, the mother's voice? I mean, they can play the mother's voice. I guess they'll just play a noise.
I suppose.
But how are you?
Thank you. I'd rather go back to talk about getting people financially secure.
Right,
Let's talk about the good things. That
I agree. AI is phenomenal.
Yeah,
no, but I even think if they can help people with that stuff, it's good. So with the financial wallet and things like this, does it mean that we will eventually come away from banknotes? Will eventually come off cash?
We're already there.
Right.
Right. So the U.S. government passed something called the Genius Act.
Mm-hmm.
It was passed just a month ago. And that was Senator Tim Scott and Senator Hagerty were the co-authors of that bill. And so now you can put the US dollar on chain as mm-hmm. something called a stable coin, that you have virtual money now, and it's equivalent, one stable coin is equivalent to $1.
And okay. What will the coin be called?
The act basically says that anyone can start a stablecoin company.
Really?
Right.
So will it monopolize with one coin, or will we all use different ones?
I think there's going to be room for both. Just like there isn't just one bank. It isn't just JP Morgan Chase for all of America. There are a big bank, but there's also many small banks.
Right.
So there's going to be like USDC and USDT, the Tether coin is out there. They were grandfathered into the act. World Liberty, Trump's company, has the USD1. Right, they're going to be launching their own stablecoin.
Right.
So this stuff is in the works. Right, but it doesn't. But the way the law is written, anyone can apply for a license and start their own stablecoin company.
And then it's just survival of the fittest. Whoever's
gets yeah, or there. Or it's I don't know. I'm sure it's survival of the niche market.
Mm-hmm.
Right, who's got a market? Who's got a good purpose, good way to use a coin.
Could I, if I had a coin called the Natasha coin and this guy over here had a coin called the David coin, could we still buy stuff with these different coins?
Yep.
And
because,
they have value?
Because one coin is $1. Because when you have that licensed stable coin, because you're a licensed, right, you're approved by the government.
Right.
So it's definitely $1.
So you have to be approved first.
Right, yeah, you have to have the license.
Got it. Is that hard to get?
I don't even know, actually. Yeah. The bill just passed. I haven't tried. If you're a bank, if you're an FDIC insured bank, you can automatically do it.
And for someone like yourself, you would definitely
we'd have it. Right, yes.
Right, I love that. Oh my God, maybe we should call it the Natasha coin.
Yes.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about real estate and mortgage. Uh-huh. This is something you have monopolized. You right. are phenomenal. You are leading the way. As I said in the beginning, people are scared. Tell me about how you got into mortgages, real estate, and the blockchain connection.
So I'll work backwards. The blockchain connection we talked about in Puerto Rico and the blockchain universe moved
right.
to my neighborhood, and I couldn't help but learning about it. Right. And then I say, look, this blockchain, you know, and AI needs to come. I was already doing a lot of stuff in AI, and I was like, hey, this is a perfect fit. And it's funny, the blockchain world really was focused on, you know, different kinds of chains and tokens and layer one technologies and so forth. No one over there was thinking about AI. And I'm like, well, we need to add AI to the mix.
Yeah.
Because one of the problems with blockchain is that it's hard to use. Right? It's complicated. But AI makes it easy to use.
Right.
So we solve a lot of problems with that. And then if you go backwards from my upbringing in mortgages and finance and real estate and securitization, I said, like, AI is perfect for making decisions, right? For deciding, like, literally every month, billions of dollars are decided by our AI. And the AI manages the decisions, the distribution of billions of dollars. So imagine if the decision and distribution of that money can happen by AI and be distributed by blockchain, what a great combination.
Mm.
How efficient that is. Right? You figure out who to send the money to, AI figures out who to send the money to and how much, and then the blockchain takes care of the delivery.
That's phenomenal.
Right? So that's how we merged AI and blockchain together.
Oh my gosh, I get it. And then going into the mortgages and real estate, how did you start in there and take it to such high heights?
Well, I was sort of thrown into it.
By your father?
By my father, yes. I mean, you know, we grew up when we immigrated to the country. I mean, literally, he had $100 because the Indian government would only let you take out $100 back in the 70s.
Wow.
So that's where we started from, $100. So kind of what happened is pretty close to exactly what happened, but not. I'm going to embellish the story a little bit here.
Okay.
So back in the 70s, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, they had a HUD repo program where you could buy foreclosed homes.
Mm-hmm.
And for, guess what, for how much? For $100. So it didn't exactly happen like this, but it's a good way to say it, that he took the $100 he had, and he bought a house from HUD.
Right. You could buy a house For $100. Is that the equivalent of like $10,000 today?
Probably something. I mean, I remember the first house that we bought, that we moved into, because we moved to the country. We lived in this little tiny apartment in Norwalk, California.
Don't even know where that is. Yeah,
exactly. And then we bought the first house we bought in Cerritos, and it was like $15,000 or something like that. This was 77 or something. And today it's worth like $1.5 million or something. Like,
whoa. Right?
So, you know, you could do the return on investment over that time. And along the way, that's the best thing about real estate. It's like, okay, the house value went up like 100-fold, right? And then on top, right, when we lived in it, we didn't pay any rent. Uh-huh. Right? We're making the mortgage, but not paying rent. And then when we moved out of that house, we rented out, and now it's paying us rent, right? So it's the best investment because you get money out of it, and the value keeps going up.
That's true.
Right. But I have to, the banker in me says, I give the full disclosure, there's no guarantee that real estate home prices will keep going up. It could go any which way.
Yeah. Okay, I love that. Honestly, no, but you're such a great person like that. You're so like to the point. Okay, so how is this like to, I gotta be asking this, but it's impressive. How many units do you own today, or properties, or, I mean, you own a mix of commercial and residential.
Yeah, we own hundreds of units across California and Texas and Oklahoma.
Wow.
My wife's amazing. She handles all that.
I love that. Yeah. Well, let me tell you.
She has the patience, dude. I don't have the patience. But
wow.
I did a lot when we were growing up. I mean, it's like, you know, we bought real estate and rented it out. And we didn't have any money, so we did it ourselves. I used to clean houses, clean bathrooms, paint, mow the lawn, whatever.
Wow.
Collect rent, right? Knock on doors, collect rent, and get yelled at. I was this little skinny, you know, 100-pound, 5'2" kid collecting rent. But I guess they felt sorry for me. No one beat me up, thankfully.
Wow. Yeah, good.
There's
you
no
made
honor.
It through.
There's no honor beating up the little 100-pound skinny kid, right?
Yeah, no. You made it through. And here you are today. So if somebody wants to get started in real estate today and they are on like a first time maybe, or they just want to buy their first unit, where do they look? What do they buy? Commercial, residential, a one bed, a two bed? What do they go to?
Well, the first house that you buy, you should buy for yourself. So if you're renting, hopefully you could find a house and that's more or less equal to the rent that you're paying.
Wow.
Okay. So that's the first thing you should do. And people think, oh, I gotta save up a lot of money and so forth. But the reality is you don't, because there's down payment assistance programs that are available at almost, I think actually, in every state in the country, in the union. Right. So you can use, you can literally get into a house with zero down, no money, because there's all these different government backed.
And your credit system on Angel AI can fix it.
Right.
So if you need credit for
it. So what you need is a stable 2 years history of income. Yeah, you need to have enough income to afford the payment, right? And if you have that, then you can buy the house.
And then they'll support you with helping on the down payment.
And the government, there's lots of different government assistance programs.
The first time I've ever heard this. Why did I not know about the assistance when I'm spending all my own money? Right. I love, soon we're having Julio Gonzalez, one of my good friends on the show, and he talks all about, you know, tax and grants and it's the same vibe. There's so much knowledge there for the world, and you're literally, you've just shared it. Okay, so what's next after that?
Yeah, so so when you buy your own home, the government programs will give you the down payment if it's for your own home, not for investment.
Right.
So, you know, so the way I've seen what we did and what a lot of people do is they buy their own home. Now they're saving all this money because now you're also saving on your taxes, right? Because you could write off your mortgage interest deduction, which is huge. People underestimate that. It's a massive amount of money you save that you get right back every year now. Okay, so then you build up equity. You when you want to buy your second house, okay. So what a lot of people do is they move up, right? You buy the first house, little house, it builds up equity, leave that there, and then you save up money and you buy a second home, right? And it's also, and you move into the second home. Now that's also owner occupied. So you do this for a year or two, you live, save, you buy another home, a little bit bigger, right? Now you're starting to build slowly a portfolio. And you rent the first one out, Now you're collecting rent. Now it's working for you, making money in your sleep. Now you own the second one. Right? Mm. So it's a slow, steady process.
Wow. Right? And then right? over
and that's,
time.
That's sort of like a kind of a tried and true method. I mean, there's more aggressive ways. There's a lot of people with other more aggressive ways to do it. Okay. I don't want to go down into that right now. But simple, safe, slow, steady process is this one.
And, this is beautiful.
And over a decade, you now have a portfolio of 4, 5, 10 houses. And this all making money for you. You're still doing your day job, whatever it is, like being a superstar like you. and you built all this wealth for your family, and it's staying intact, right? And
this is
what,
awesome.
Yeah, what one thing you got to be careful about. Well, I'll back up for a minute. And we talk about down payment assistance programs for most people, but a lot of veterans don't realize that the VA loan program, they don't need any money down. It's a zero down program. So if you're a veteran,
oh wow, right,
you could buy a house and under the veteran loan program, you don't need any money down.
And, that is so phenomenal to know. I hope my vets out there are listening and hear this knowledge, because this is, you've just given us some of the most valuable knowledge today that I've ever heard about this. What about mortgages? How does somebody get a mortgage? Does your program with your AI help?
Yes, you could just go in there and if you're a veteran
or not a veteran.
Or not a veteran, you can just go to Ask Angel and ask her about different mortgage programs. Tell her your situation. Is this what I just, you know, start with, I'm looking to buy a house. And where are you looking to buy a house? She's not going to tell you which houses to buy. That's, you need a professional real estate agent for that. But more importantly, though, she gives you the cash to buy the house. Right? You want to be able to walk into, if you see the house that you want to buy, you want to be able to walk in there with a briefcase full of cash and say, okay, here's my briefcase full of cash. I want this house. How much power do you think that puts you in negotiating your offer, right? Because it gives you a lot of power when you actually have that cash, right? So when
and that could be digitally as well.
That's what Angel AI basically gives you, in essence, digital cash. So she gives you a blockchain-based token that's committed to that money to buy, you know, whether it's $100,000 or $1 million, whatever. It's you get this commitment in a token, right? That will be accepted by anybody. You put that in the offer, like, I got the money, it's cash, it's like a cash offer.
Are you showing a token literally?
No, you just on, you know, what happens is technically is on the purchase contract, you check no loan contingency, right? So that means no loan contingency means you will get paid.
The full house amount.
Right, yeah, for whatever the purchase, and Angel.
Four, five, 10 million.
Whatever Angel approved you for.
This is so fascinating. I'm like wanting to buy more houses. I'm like, this is a whole different way of doing it.
That's right. What buyers don't realize is that the negotiating power cash buyers have. So there's a lot of cash buyers out there, especially a lot of money coming in from 30% of U.S. real estate sold to foreign nationals because money comes into this country. It's good for this country. It's good for the dollar.
Yeah.
We want people investing in America.
Yeah.
But the downside to that is that you now have to compete with them when you want to buy your house.
Mm.
Okay, so let's level the playing field. Let's give you an AI that can effectively give you the same negotiating power. It gives you the same cash level power, right? So you spend a few minutes with the AI, you give it the information, give her the document that she asked for,
and then
right away, she's going to give you this, what we call a true approval, and which is a blockchain lockdown money.
This is fascinating. Yeah. I know this is teaching somebody out there. You're a genius, Pavan. You are a genius. Oh my goodness. I love this. I mean, I've known that for a while, but you really are interesting. Yeah. This is so helpful coming from someone of your status and who you are and what you've achieved. So my final question is, what are you passionate about right now? What innovations are you? You just told us what you're already working on, but what's coming next? What are you passionate about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm passionate about, and I don't know if it's right now or I think it's more like forever, is making sure people get a fair shake. And it's not, I don't worry about the top 2%.
Right.
The top 2% can walk into a bank and dictate the terms. Right. They're walking with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of us, right, walk into a bank and are scared, intimidated, timid, don't have the confidence, right? So my job is to get that confidence in everyone, right? And to show you what we say, nothing is beyond reach. I'd have that confidence. So the AI, so you don't have to walk into the bank, right? It's banking without the bank, right? So you talk to the AI, and the AI gives you the confidence. It's going to tell you and say, here's the money. You're approved for so much money, right? And it's going to tell you the right way to manage your money. Like one of the things I'm saying, we're talking about veterans, mm-hmm. right? One of the actual stats we've analyzed for years is veterans are 3 times less likely to be approved than non-veterans. Yeah, it's very sad. Yeah, even though there's all these VA loan programs, black borrowers are twice as less likely to be approved than white borrowers. Hispanics about 1.75. Right. So there's a lot. It's like I gotta get this product out into everybody's hands that are getting left out. And then there's the latest you know, lending scam, banking scam that's happening for veterans, which I think is just awful. Is that some banks are exploiting loopholes in the VA loan guideline. Okay, so what has happened is, you know, home prices have gone up a lot mm-hmm. in the last, you know, 5 years, right? And so there's a lot of veterans out there, you know, like, you know, you got a house at 6%, 7% interest rate. And what lenders are doing is saying, oh, wait, but you got all this equity. So they'll get you into refinancing your house and maybe drop it from 7% to 6%. Say, look, I saved you a whole percent in interest rate. Right, and maybe you drop their payment by a few dollars. Monthly payments go down just a little bit, but then they strip all the equity. They tack on $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of fees to your loan balance. Now you owe a lot more money. All right, so this is a loophole in the VA guidelines. Right, I mean the government can't think of everything. I don't blame them. Right, it's like, you know, it's like cat and mouse game with you know, banks that get greedy and government guidelines. So people are being misled into thinking, oh, wait, this is not gonna cost me anything, I'm gonna save money. And no one ever explains to them, no, it actually is costing you because it's taking all that money that was saved right. in your house. And when it's where you're not looking, it's the pocket you're not looking in, right? And that pocket is where they took all the money and got their fees out from, right? So this is, and I'm seeing this happen a lot right now. And that's why I say, you know what? You got to talk to an AI because the AI is not going to send you down those kinds of paths. Even though, yes, the guidelines let you do it, and the VA hasn't caught on to this
yet
scam yet, but uh-huh. they will eventually. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, this is just wild. Yeah. And I just want to finish with the fact that you are big in philanthropy and you support an autism charity.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
I don't know, is that yours or is that something that you've always been passionate about?
Actually, it's my partner, Anthony. I don't think you've met him.
I don't think I've met him yet.
He actually started studying autism long ago, before he had kids. And because one of our employees had a child who was autistic, and that's where he started
right.
getting into it. And from there, then you know, he educated himself about it, and he's just, you know, don't want to get political here, but he's a big, huge fan of RFK. I'm a big fan of RFK because I just, a lot of everything that he's saying is coming out.
Right.
RFK has been talking about this stuff when they were trying to shut him up, and now it's all true, right?
Wow.
Like with, you know, I don't know if you've seen the hearings with the mercury in the vaccines and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's all being exposed now. So, but anyways, you know, like 1 in 33 children have autism. I mean, it's just numbers keep going up.
Wild.
Right? So, you know, so anything we can do to help on that cause, and I think the greatest thing that has happened is if you either hate or love Trump, it doesn't matter whether you love or hate the tariffs, I don't really care about that. RFK is heading the health, you know, HHS,
so
which is because he is cleaning up all the junk out of our food, all the junk out of our medicines, right? He's straightened this out, and that is gonna have long-term huge benefits to all of us. So,
so powerful. Well, thank you so much for sharing today. I love what you're about. I love what you believe in. I love how you're guiding the way for AI, for the world, and helping people to get houses and mortgages and real estate. I think this is so powerful. Thank you for being here. I can't wait to catch up with you again soon. Let's go rock that stage. And guys, if you've enjoyed today, make sure you share this episode with your friend. Who is that friend that you want to share it with today? Who is that person that you have on your heart today? Like, you know what? This is so good. Maybe it's your mom. Maybe it's your dad. Maybe it's your child. Maybe it's your bestie. Whoever that person is, go and send it to them today. As we share, we grow and we receive. And I'll see you again back with an awesome guest next week.